Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we continue our 30 Issues election series with Issue 17. The United States is, or isn't, heading for a debt crisis. It's kind of remarkable, really, for the issue that might be the most central to gridlock in Washington. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump both barely mention it. The last time the federal government had a surplus in any year was when Bill Clinton was president.
People ask me all the time how we got four surplus budgets in a row. What new ideas did we bring to Washington? I always give a one-word answer. Arithmetic.
Ha, that was Clinton speaking at the 2012 Democratic Convention. But if that one-word answer, arithmetic, seems like common sense, just add politics to your equation and add some spending programs you think are important to the country, and you might get a different result. Here is President Reagan on the rising debt during his presidency when he was spending a lot on a big military buildup.
Let me say what the defense debate is not about. It is not about spending arithmetic. I know that in the last few weeks you've been bombarded with numbers and percentages. Some say we need only a 5% increase in defense spending. The so-called alternate budget, backed by liberals in the House of Representatives, would lower the figure to 2 to 3%, cutting our defense spending by $163 billion over the next 5 years. The trouble with all these numbers is that they tell us little about the kind of defense program America needs or the benefits in security and freedom that our defense effort buys for us.
President Reagan in 1983, you figure out what the country needs and then worry about the arithmetic. Just 2 years earlier, though, he had told a joint session of Congress that he was really worried about the national debt.
Can we who man the ship of state deny it is somewhat out of control? Our national debt is approaching $1 trillion. A few weeks ago, I called such a figure, $1 trillion, incomprehensible. And I've been trying ever since to think of a way to illustrate how big a trillion really is. And the best I could come up with is that if you had a stack of $1,000 bills in your hand, only 4 inches high, you'd be a millionaire. $1 trillion would be a stack of $1,000 bills 67 miles high. The interest on the public debt this year we know will be over $90 billion. And unless we change the proposed spending for the fiscal year beginning October 1st, we'll add another almost $80 billion to the debt.
A trillion here, a trillion there. Soon you're talking real money, at least in 1981 dollars. He nailed the issue, by the way. The problem with the national debt is the interest we have to pay. Think of your own budget. If your student loans are so big, you pay 75% of your income to the bank every month. You don't have much left for food and childcare and medical expenses and whatever else, not to mention going out and having fun. Now, governments don't go out and have fun, but still, if the accumulated debt gets too big, so many of our annual tax dollars go to paying the interest on bonds that all the other important things get squeezed: education, healthcare, defense, you name it. But how much is too much? Politicians have fought about that for generations.
If we assume the debts the union gets, a new line of credit, a financial diuretic, how do you not get it? If we're aggressive and competitive, the union gets a boost. You'd rather give it a sedative.
That's Cabinet Battle Number 1 from the Hamilton soundtrack. Hamilton, America's first Treasury Secretary, saw the very first federal deficits as a means to economic growth and international power. He also established the Bank of the United States, a precursor to the Federal Reserve, to loan the government money. Thomas Jefferson saw the Bank of the United States as a scheme to help the rich get richer. Sound familiar? How much debt for what public purpose has remained a political issue ever since. In the 1960 presidential debates, John F. Kennedy argued for not reducing the national debt.
I did not advocate reducing the federal debt because I don't believe that you're going to be able to reduce the federal debt very much in 1961, 2, or 3. I think you have heavy obligations which affect our security, which we're going to have to meet. And therefore, I've never suggested we should be able to retire the debt substantially or even at all in 1961
Senator,
or two.
I believe.
National security was one reason at the height of the Cold War. He also wanted to borrow to give public school teachers a raise. Imagine that in today's politics. And to create Medicare, which didn't yet exist.
Medical care for the aged, I would put under Social Security. The Vice President and I disagree on this. Secondly, I support federal aid to education and federal aid for teacher salaries. I think that's a good investment. I think we're going to have to do it. And I think to heap the burden further on the property tax, which is already strained in many of our communities, will ensure, in my opinion, that many of our children will not be adequately educated and many of our teachers not adequately compensated. There is no greater return to an economy or to a society than an educational system second to none.
How interesting that way back in 1960, they were already concerned about the increase in local property taxes to pay for education. Richard Nixon's comeback in that debate was to oppose the creation of Medicare as too expensive.
It should be pointed out that, of course, it is not possible, particularly under the proposals that Senator Kennedy has advocated, either to cut the national debt or to reduce taxes. As a matter of fact, it will be necessary to raise taxes. As Senator Kennedy points out, that as far as his one proposal is concerned, the one for medical care for the aged, that would be financed out of Social Security. That, however, is raising taxes for those who pay Social Security.
Shortly thereafter, Nixon continued.
If he unbalances the budget, that means you have inflation, and that will be, of course, a very cruel blow to the very people, the older people that we've been talking about. As far as aid for school construction is concerned, I favor that, as Senator Kennedy did in January of this year, when he said he favored that rather than aid to teacher salaries. I favor that because I believe that's the best way to aid our schools without running any risk whatever of the federal government telling our teachers what to teach.
Nixon and Kennedy from the first ever televised presidential debate on September 26, 1960. Remember Bill Clinton boasting about those four consecutive balanced budgets, 1997 to 2000? In fairness, Newt Gingrich and his Republican allies in the House did a lot to push Clinton into it. We will get to Gingrich in just a minute. Forgive me, I skipped over one of the clips. In 1965, 5 years after that Nixon-Kennedy debate, LBJ was president, and he was trying to spend a lot of federal money on both his Great Society programs, including Medicare, which he had then created, and the Vietnam War. And he was asked this by a reporter.
What you have outlined as your program for now, it would seem that you feel that we can have guns and butter for the foreseeable future. Do you have any idea right now, though, that down the road a piece, the American people may have to face the problem of guns or butter?
I have not the slightest doubt, but whatever it's necessary to face, the American people will face. I think that all of us know that we are now in the 52nd month of the prosperity that's been unequaled in this nation. And I see no reason for declaring a national emergency, and I rejected that course of action earlier today when I made my decision. I cannot foresee what next year or the following year will hold. I only know that the Americans will do whatever is necessary, and at the moment we enjoy the good fortune of having an unparalleled period of prosperity with us, and this government's going to do all it can to see it continued.
An unparalleled period of prosperity in the mid-60s, allowing LBJ to build up the troop strength in Vietnam and start Medicare and Medicaid and other programs without worrying about the national debt. Now back to the Clinton years and Clinton boasting about those four consecutive balanced budgets, 1997 to 2000. In fairness, Newt Gingrich and his Republican allies in the House did a lot to push Clinton into it. In 1994, the year the Republicans won a majority in the House for the first time in 40 years, Gingrich campaigned on his contract with America, which included a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution.
Now, you can ask us, how will we take this huge, out-of-balance, enormous federal budget, and how will we change it? Let me surprise all of you by quoting from the greatest president of the 20th century, who stood in this city on March 4th, 1933, in the middle of a Great Depression, standing in braces at a time when it was inconceivable that a man in a wheelchair could lead a great nation. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself. And I would say to all of you, if we truly reach out, not just for the first 100 days, but if we Republicans are prepared to reach out to the American people again and again and again, if we're prepared to have town hall meetings and invite every citizen to come with their ideas for cutting spending, if we're prepared to go out to the information revolution and find every method for downsizing, if we will approach the challenge of getting to a balanced budget with the standpoint that we have nothing to fear but fear itself, we'll get there.
Gingrich in 94. Now, the balanced budget amendment never got off the ground as a change to the Constitution, but it did as a matter of politics and economics during the boom of the late 90s, which helped produce enough tax revenue that those four balanced budgets were easier than they might have been. But then in 2000 came the bursting of the tech bubble, strike one, and the next year, 9/11, which hit the economy, strike two. Federal tax revenue took that double hit. And President George W. Bush, newly elected, also wanted a big new income tax cut. He got it while starting the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Strike three. The national debt started to skyrocket again. By 2008, when Bush was leaving office, presidential candidate Barack Obama ran against the Bush deficits and even called them unpatriotic.
The problem is that the way Bush has done it over the last 8 years is to take out a credit card from the Bank of China in the name of our children, driving up our national debt from $5 trillion for the first 42 presidents. Number 43 added $4 trillion by his lonesome, so that we now have over $9 trillion of debt that we are going to have to pay back. $30,000 for every man, woman, and child. That's irresponsible. It's unpatriotic.
Obama in 08, pretty different from Obama in 2012, when he got criticized for running up the debt with his Keynesian response to the financial crisis.
We don't have to worry about it short term. Right now, interest rates are low because people still consider the United States the safest and greatest country on earth, rightfully so. But it is a problem long term, mm-hmm, and even medium term. And so we're going to have to take care of this debt and this deficit, but we've got to do it in a balanced way.
Obama on David Letterman during his 2012 reelection campaign. And when he was reelected, the Republican House pushed the debt issue hard. The next year, 2013, saw one partial government shutdown over the issue of government spending for the first time since Gingrich was Speaker, an actual government shutdown led by Ted Cruz, and almost saw another over raising the debt ceiling to pay back our incurred debts. The federal government even had its S&P credit rating downgraded because Cruz and the Tea Party seemed serious. Obama pushed back.
Members of Congress and the House Republicans in particular don't get to demand ransom in exchange for doing their jobs. And two of their very basic jobs are passing a budget and making sure that America's paying its bills. They don't also get to say, you know, unless you give me what the voters rejected in the last election, I'm going to cause a recession. That's not how it works.
So that was 2013. The Republicans got a lot of bad press for the shutdown and debt ceiling debacle, but then racked up big wins in the 2014 midterm elections, expanding their majority in the House and winning control of the Senate. There was a popular base for what they did. And yet neither Clinton nor Trump are running on the debt. We'll talk to two guests now. In a few minutes, Mark Zandi from Moody's Analytics, who's been comparing Clinton and Trump's economic plans. And first, with an eye on the history clips we just played, as well as the present, none other than Alan Simpson, Republican senator from Wyoming from 1979 to 1997, co-chair with Democrat Erskine Bowles of the Simpson-Bowles Fiscal Responsibility and Reform Commission in 2010. And as some of you astute listeners know, a guy who helped Anna Sale, host of our Death, Sex, and Money podcast, figure out what to do with her Wyoming boyfriend. Spoiler alert, they're now married and recently had their first child. Hi, Senator Simpson. Welcome back to WNYC.
What a pleasure, and what a wonderful, thoughtful review of things. That was, you're doing an educational process there that is good. It's cheaper than Hamilton, but good. I'll tell you, that's terrific. Really, I was very impressed by that.
It's all true. Really glad you enjoyed it and vouch for it. By the way, after your touching and hilarious role in Anna's podcast, did you go to the wedding?
Oh, yeah. Not only that, we hosted the reception, the bridal, after the rehearsal. And I read the original email that he wrote me. I don't remember him at all. And I read it. He said, "You're not going to read that." I said, "Yeah, this is called taking a risk in life. And you took a big one, pal." And so we hosted that. Her family, his family, we're at the wedding. The dog howled. We were outside. Oh, it was big stuff, I'll tell you. A lot of fun.
And
they live just two doors away, and he's headed for Berkeley as a professor. And her program, they said, "Anna, you can move anywhere. You're the best." So she's headed out there with him, and this beautiful little girl, June Sale, was at a function last night, attached to her mother, I might add, quite attached. I mean, you couldn't get any more attached. 2 months old. Wonderful to see.
Wait, they gave her the mother's last name?
The mother, Anna Sale, and the child's name is June Sale.
There you go. A matriarch, matrilineal, I guess. our Anna Sale, whose Death, Sex, and Money podcast will continue. Well, she'll always be fond of you for your relationship advice and, I guess, your ongoing relationship. I joked with her, well, maybe you'll ask Mitch McConnell for parenting tips. But...
I don't think you get far there, but she has high regard for you. And last night we were together, as I say, at a function with Arthur. I said, "I got to get to bed. I got to get up and do a little with Brian Lehrer." She said, "What?" He's somebody I worked with and enjoyed so much, and she's very high on you. But anyway,
Thank you. You're talking
big tough. You're talking stuff.
Yeah, that's right. And she said it wouldn't be the same going to another senator for personal advice. Anyway, any thoughts on the debt in the big sweep of history from Alexander Hamilton to the present?
I had the joy and pleasure, Ann and I, to see Hamilton a few weeks ago. Man, I love that, because that has to be, you know, young people don't pay any attention to history. They don't even teach it in some places. That play and things you do in this, that educates people to the tremendous responsibility of doing something with a debt. Now, don't forget, the only part you left off is that Obama took it from $11 trillion to $19
billion.
I mean, you know, let's get serious. You don't forget who did it. This is the greatest blame game in the world, is America right now, or how to pick a scab and get into it and go back. And the issue is not how we got there. It's what do we do now? And debt is on automatic pilot. It's unstoppable right now unless you do things with the biggest items in the budget, which is health care, and not be nasty and call it Obamacare. Health care and the solvency of Social Security, and nobody's touching it with a stick.
Let me play one more history clip and see what you think about it in the light of current events. In the 80s, as you know, since you were in the Senate, there was already a deal necessary to shore up Social Security. But here's something Ronald Reagan said at the time in one of the presidential debates with Walter Mondale in 1984.
Social Security has nothing to do with the deficit. Social Security is totally funded by the payroll tax levied on employer and employee. If you reduce the outgo of Social Security, that money would not go into the general fund to reduce a deficit. It would go into the Social Security Trust Fund. So Social Security has nothing to do with balancing a budget or erasing or lowering the deficit.
Huh. Did you agree with President Reagan then, and do you today?
Well, all I can say is read the trustees' report. A new one just came out. These are thoughtful Republicans and Democrats. Call the Social Security trustees, and they're saying by doing nothing, in the year 2034, you're going to waddle up to the window and get a check for 21% less. And don't bother with what that thing you got in the mail which says schedule benefits, because the law, well, FDR was pretty cute. You put in there that there's no schedule benefits, you get the payable benefit. And anybody that pretends, and then they stole a trust fund. Give me a break. The law provided that it got to $2.5 trillion or $3 trillion. That's true, but you put in gold-edged treasuries, and you take it out to build things and do things, and then when you need the money, you put in the gold treasury, and you pull out the money, and we started to do that when we were working the issue in 2010. That started, and now this baby is about $900 billion in deficit.
If we just funded Social Security out of the Social Security tax that President Reagan referred to there. He said that's why it has nothing to do with the national debt. It's its own closed system. There's a special Social Security tax, and that pays for Social Security. If it never was raided to pay for other government functions, would there be a Social Security debt bomb sitting there, in your opinion?
No, but don't forget, we really only raided it once, and I think it was in Johnson's administration where it was a raid. The others are not raids. They're putting in, except it doesn't appear as a budget transaction, they put in these things into the gold treasuries and pull it out, use the money, and then when I need the money, but there isn't. Look, when I was drinking beer at the University of Wyoming, there were 16 people paying into this system and one taken out. Today, there are three people paying in and one taken out. This baby was set up when you died at 63 and you retired at 65. That's a pretty good way to set up something. And now the average age is 80 and you can still retire at 62. I heard the part earlier, try arithmetic, try math. Bill Clinton's absolutely correct. Try it on Social Security and bring tears to your eyes.
When your Simpson-Bowles debt report came out in 2010, it got criticized by people like Paul Krugman from the left for being too stingy with Social Security and Medicare, and from people like Paul Ryan on the right for being too big government in its solutions. And sure enough, Congress was too polarized, as you well know, to do anything with it. How much do you think there is a ticking time bomb, I guess you made that clear with your last answer, called the national debt, and how much do you think a consensus is possible about what to do about it?
It's impossible. I love it. Erskine is one of the greatest guys I've ever worked with, and he was the guy under Clinton, chief of staff, who balanced the budget. Don't forget who did that. That was Erskine. People come up to us. It's a joy to watch. They clutch at your clothing, and they say, love what you did, except for that one part. And they'll jab your eyeballs out with a stick if you touch that part. Let me tell you, you can't. And the tax code, when you hear a guy moan and bitch about 47% of people don't pay taxes, just remember the tax code has about 200 things in it, and only 20% of the American people use 80% of the stuff in the tax code, and it costs over $1 trillion a year.
You mean so you wanted to raise some taxes and you wanted to lower some spending, and depending on whether the person was coming at you from the left or the right, that one thing or the other was a deal breaker.
I tell you, the thing that was great, people will say, well, who voted for this turkey? Well, it's a 67-page report in English, uses words like going broke and shared sacrifice, which nobody can understand. And they said, well, who voted for it? Well, I said, Dick Durbin. Dick Durbin, that commie from Illinois. Well, Tom Coburn, that Republican guy from Oklahoma, let me tell you, our purpose.
Senator Alan Simpson, former Senator Alan Simpson, with us for just another minute or so here on WNYC in our 30 Issues election series, looking at the debt, issue 17. And before you go, I can't resist but to ask your thoughts about Donald Trump. Since you're a retired Republican senator, on a scale from intrigued to horrified at the prospect of him as president, where would you place yourself?
I have to go to the bathroom.
You and Paul Ryan.
I stay out of. I can't. I can define them all four of them. You know, Bernie, Hillary, you know, the whole works, but it's a difficult thing, and our party is being hammered. And of course, Republicans, I've been with them 84 years. I voted for Ike in 20, and Republicans always give each other the saliva test of purity, and then they lose, and then they bitch for 4 years, and boy, are they headed for that.
But many people say he's not a normal candidate. He refused to endorse Paul Ryan for re-election yesterday. Did you see that?
I did. We never know what the Donald is up to, and we just glue ourselves to 24/7, and that's half of what's got America absolutely confounded. Who's going to wear a orange jumpsuit? Who's going to go to the clink? Who's going to have a hearing? And meanwhile, the ship of state is careening along with nobody dealing with two-thirds of the American budget, and that's pretty sad. And then they can't do a budget, because if they try one, then they'll get ripped to shreds by, particularly by the AARP. If any of you out there are members of the AARP, that's about 38 million Americans bound together by a common love of airline discounts and all sorts of things and erectile dysfunction ads. It's most amazing, and they don't give a whit about their grandchildren, and they are absolutely the most irresponsible group in the world today. And senior citizens, boy, you don't mess with them. Hell, I've been on Social Security since I was 15, put in $5. I never put in over $800 when I practiced law for 18 years. Now they come in and say, I'll get it all back. Well, you got it all back in the first 4 years if you're my age, period.
Well, nice way to bring it back to the debt. But you don't want to take a stand on President Obama's call yesterday for Republicans to say, look, Donald Trump is just not qualified to be president.
Yeah, but watch out, because the more that Obama gets nasty, or Hillary, or anybody else, or the New York Times, or the Post, or what people see as the libs, the more that helps Trump. Watch out.
If the Republicans don't, in fact, join them.
Alan Simpson. That's right, but watch out.
What a pleasure. Thank you very much for giving us this time.
Thank you very much.
It's our 30 Issues election series, Issue 17, The National Debt Is or Isn't a Ticking Time Bomb.